Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Megurei Aviv Be'eretz Kena'an. Jacob settled in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Kena'an.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. You're here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your editor, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Shabbat Parshat Vayeshev, but really it's for Chanukah, the first of two shows hopefully we will have for Chanukah. And I must say right up front, humble apologies for not getting out Vayishlach last week. I had a problem on Thursday. I had hoped to do it late Thursday night to get onto the archives, and that didn't work out. I actually started recording on Motzoi Shabbat, and that didn't work out. And then I sort of got involved in this week's Torah Tidbits, which was not only a regular issue, but it had a Hanukkah pullout, has a Hanukkah pullout, and it never got done. So, for those regular listeners who missed their dose of Torah Tidbits audio, I am flattered, humbled, and very apologetic for not doing it. This show, as I just mentioned, I'll say recording and first broadcast, as I usually say, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 22nd of the month of Kislev, 5773, and it corresponds to December 6th, the day before Pearl Harbor Day. And what else do we have to know? This Shabbat, we bench Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh Tevet is always during Hanukkah. This year it is a single day, next Friday, a week from tomorrow, as of this recording. And we end up with an overlap between Hanukkah and Rosh Chodesh. I don't find that at all merely coincidental. I find it very significant. In fact, I'll sort of start with that idea. What you're going to get from me is a little bit of Vayeshev, a lot of Hanukkah, and the Hanukkah will not be in an organized, start from the beginning way. I'm assuming most people know the basics of Hanukkah, and my purpose is to add some new thoughts and twists and new avenues of reflection to make Hanukkah special and more meaningful. But first, Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. On Hanukkah itself, we do not say Tachanun, we say Hallel, but today is still before Hanukkah, and therefore we said Tachanun today, and therefore we will say 130. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shimava Koli Tihiena Aznecha Kashuvot Lakol Tachanunai. Imavonot Tishmoria Adonai Mia Amod. Ki imacha haslicha lema'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi velidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya ha'omidim bein bayam ובין ביבשה, המקום ירחם עליהם, ויוציאם מצרה לירווחה, ומאפלה לאורה, ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן. On top of everything else, I'm not recording with my usual headset and microphone. I think I left that at home because I brought it home to do last Thursday night or Motzoi Shabbat, and it didn't get done, and it didn't get back here to the office. So you might hear some hissing and blowing, whatever. I don't have one of those sponge foam things over the microphone piece, and I am hearing from my speakers a little bit of those puffs, which that sponge is supposed to get rid of. So, again, apologies, but enough with the apologies, I hope. All right, let's look at it this way. The choice of the date for Hanukkah, the 25th of Kislev, is basically because that's when the Hashmonaim, the Maccabees, were successful in their battle against the Syrian Greeks, or Greek Syrians, and that's when they rededicated the Beit HaMikdash. So the fact that Rosh Chodesh falls during Hanukkah is a main result of the fact that starting at the 25th of the month is Hanukkah, that our sages proclaimed 8-day holiday, and it can't be otherwise. But there's a fringe benefit or an added significance to Rosh Chodesh being part of Hanukkah, and that is that the whole concept of the Jewish calendar and Rosh Chodesh and the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh was a particular target of Greek oppression at the period of the Second Temple that we're talking about. In other words, the Greeks attempted to take away the observance of Judaism from the Jewish population, and that can be generalized to the banning of all Torah learning and all mitzvah practice. But it seems from our sources that they were specific targets that the Greeks felt if they could stop us from doing those, they would succeed in tearing away our Judaism from ourselves. One of them was the setting up of the Jewish calendar, that the Sanhedrin organizes the calendar based on the mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, and this would decentralize the authority of Halacha, of the Sanhedrin, and this would be a major blow to the independence and individualness, uniqueness of the Jewish people, and as a result we would become more like everybody else, which is what their goal was. We are overgeneralizing now, of course, but the main goal of Hellenism was to assimilate the populations of the countries that the Greeks occupied and bring them into the Hellenistic culture, and that meant stripping away, in our case, traditional Judaism. And they determined, for their reasons, that Kiddush HaChodesh was a main significant target. Therefore, in our celebration of Hanukkah, our celebration of victory over the Hashmonaim, of the Hashmonaim over the Greeks, we had incorporated by the calendar, by virtue of the calendar, the celebration of Rosh Chodesh, which sometimes is one day and sometimes is 2 days during Hanukkah. I'll talk about that in a moment because I believe that's an extra factor here. And it means that when we celebrate, we're lighting the lamps of the menorah to commemorate the restoration and return of temple practice, which was part of the victory, and the return and the restoration of the power of Sanhedrin to set up the Jewish calendar, as demonstrated by the Rosh Chodesh that falls during Hanukkah. If it wouldn't, it still would be part of what we, part of our mindset for Hanukkah, but it's there. And if you don't believe in coincidences, and I don't, then it becomes significant that Hanukkah, as opposed to Purim and Pesach and Sukkot and Shavuot and Yom Kippur and even Rosh Hashanah, which is Rosh Chodesh, but Rosh Chodesh is eclipsed on Rosh Hashanah, hardly mentioned in prayer or any time during the day, and Rosh Chodesh is definitely mentioned Hanukkah time, because we continue benching Rosh Chodesh. We don't announce Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. That's how eclipsed it gets on Rosh Hashanah time. But here, either Shabbat Chanukah or the Shabbat immediately before Chanukah, as this year, we announce the Rosh Chodesh that's coming up during Chanukah. In addition to all of this, and on a quieter, more subtle level, but nonetheless, one of my favorite things is the workings of the Jewish calendar, is we have the following phenomenon. The calendar is organized in such a way, our fixed calendar today, without a Sanhedrin, it is organized in such a way that there are years that we need to add a day and years that we need to take away a day in order to have the flow from one Rosh Hashanah to the next. In order to get the one day less when necessary, we drop the 30th day of Kislev. Kislev is officially assigned 30 days in normal years, and in those years where we need to take away one day so that next Rosh Hashanah doesn't get messed up, the 30th of Kislev is dropped. When we need an extra day, it's the 30th of Mar Cheshvan. Mar Cheshvan has 29 days regularly assigned to it, and sometimes 30. Now, if you think about it logically, any plus or minus one day anywhere in the calendar would accomplish the same goal of matching the day that Rosh Hashanah is supposed to be in the following year. Yet, the choice of Mar Cheshvan and Kislev to make this variation, whatever reason it was done, and I'm not suggesting this is why, I'm just saying this is a result. As a result of the fact that Mar Cheshvan and Kislev are the two variable months, the topic of calendar, Jewish calendar, plays a more significant role. Let's not say that. We are more aware of the calendar at Hanukkah than on other dates. Other dates are fixed. Calendar has a certain variability to it. Just to give you a couple of trivia points, but again, to me, it makes the topic of Kiddush HaChodesh come to the fore, and that's very appropriate for Hanukkah. You have the fact that Rosh Hashanah and most dates of the year, to be specific, 296 of them, 295 really, out of 385, that's over 75% of the dates of the calendar, have 4 days of the week on which they can fall, and 3 days of the week on which they can't fall. And they're all related to each other, all of those dates. They follow a neat pattern within this rule, which is called Lo Adu Rosh. Because of the Mar Cheshvan 30, sometimes yes, usually no, it produced a situation where the days of Kislev can fall on almost any day of the week, specifically 6 days of the week, yes, and one day not. That's why, when it comes to, let's say, the Pesach Seder, it could only be Friday night, Saturday night, it can't be Sunday night, it can be Monday night, but it can't be Tuesday night. It can be Wednesday night, but it can't be Thursday night. So there are 3 days where it can't be, 4 days where it can be. When it comes to the first candle of Hanukkah, there are 6 possibilities. And they're interesting because, for example, this year, with the first day and last candle both being on Motzoi Shabbat, people say, wait a minute, when was the last time we had the first candle on Saturday night, right after Shabbat? Now, it happens to be that the last time was 20 years ago, which is why people who say, I don't remember the last time this happened, are correct, because 20 years is a long time to remember. It happens more frequently than every 20 years, because before 20 years ago, it happened 4 years before that and 3 years before that. But there's no neat, discernible pattern. There are numbers that keep coming up when you look at a large range of years. But somehow, and I know that I'm going on because it's one of my favorite kind of things to talk about, so I won't continue, but I'll just say, because of the way the calendar is made, and because the way Hanukkah falls, the calendars in general, and Rosh Chodesh in particular, play a more significant role on Hanukkah, which is wonderfully appropriate. Add to that that another target of the Greeks was Brit Milah, circumcision. And Amir Tzashem, I'll talk more about that connection next week when we are approaching not just Hanukkah, but the end of Hanukkah, which means including the eighth day of Hanukkah. But Brit Milah was a target, and the 8 days of Hanukkah and the 8 candles that you have place for in a Chanukiah can't but bring to mind that mitzvah which the Yevanim wanted to take away from us. They were clever in pinpointing their targets, and thank God, with the cooperation and partnership of human effort on our part, and God's hand, we succeeded in preserving Brit Milah, preserving Kiddush HaChodesh, preserving Shabbat, preserving Torah learning, which were all the main targets of the Greek oppression. That was, of course, probably the most popular song of Hanukkah, Ma'oz Tzur. This particular version was from an album by Shalhevet, and the fact that the melody is attributed to some German beer hall song from the 1400s or something like that doesn't change the popularity of Ma'oz Tzur in our Hanukkah repertoire. It is not just a song that is sung, but it is part of the candlelighting procedure and ceremony, and that makes it all the more popular. Any other song is sort of your choice. What do you want to sing now? But Ma'oz Tzur is printed in the prayer books as that song, which is sung as part of candlelighting, right after the candlelighting and after the brachot and after the Hanerot Halalu, Ma'oz Tzur. Ma'oz Tzur consists of six stanzas. First five initial letters spell out the name Mordechai, which is the who was the author or the poet of Ma'oz Tzur. I don't know if we know anything about him, but it was a common style to sort of sign your name in the initial letters of the various stanzas. And what's special about Ma'oz Tzur is that it discusses not only the Hanukkah story, but there's a stanza for Egyptian oppression and redemption, for the story of Purim with Haman and Mordechai, and also the Babylonian exile. So it touches upon a more universal message than just the Hanukkah story, which Hanukkah contains. That was Ma'oz Tzur. Before the midpoint, I just want to throw in a little bit of Vayeshev. Until Vayeshev, in the last couple of sederas, we've had the clashes between Yaakov and Esav, and Yaakov and Lavan, both of whom different, but both of whom are seen as enemies from outside the Jewish people. Even though Esav was a twin of Yaakov, and Lavan was his father-in-law and uncle, we still view that kind of enemy from the outside. In this week's Seder of Vayeshev, we're introduced to an enmity of a different type, a very sad one, and that is the clash between the brothers, Yosef's brothers and Yosef, and that too, in addition to the enemies from the outside, echo throughout Jewish history, which is why we look at them carefully. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Vayeshev, really for Chanukah. But I want to continue, but also take a couple of steps back and look at it from a different introductory comment, and then it will sort of be a continuation. There are two times in our services, which are two different prayers, let's say, where we use a phrase. The phrase is Bayamim Hohem Bazman Hazeh. It is translated as in those days at this time. Literally, let's call it on the straightforward meaning of that phrase, we're talking about something that happened in the past at this time of the year. So the two places we see this are the brachot, specifically the second bracha for candle lighting, when we first say Lahadlik Ne'er Chanukah, to light the Chanukah lights, and then follow that immediately by a blessing that God is a Sha'asa Nisim La'avoteinu, he who performed miracles for our ancestors, Bayamim Hohem, in those days, at this time of the year. We say this bracha for candle lighting, we say it for Megillat Esther. Also, in Al HaNisim, which is an insertion into the daily Amidah, each Amidah, we introduce the Chanukah part of it. with, and the Purim part of it, with Al HaNisim Va'al HaPurkan Va'al HaGvurot Va'al HaTeshuot Va'al HaMilchamot. We thank you also for the miracles, the redemption, the mighty deeds, the salvations, and the victories in battle, which you performed for our ancestors in those days at this time. Again, you have in those days in the past, at this time of the year. That's the straight understanding. I believe we need to see it also in a different way. We need to take, and this was the title of the lead tidbit this week, which was a little tough for me, because I had like three or four working titles, and I finally went with this one. Bayamim Hahem Bazman Hazeh, meaning we acknowledge miracles and victories that God performed in those days, way back when, and Bazman Hazeh, in our time. In other words, we see a pattern in Jewish history that Chanukah was not a one-shot deal 2,100-something years ago. It is an ongoing type of story with different characters and slightly different format, but nonetheless the same kind of thing. Same thing with Purim. Purim is a holiday in itself that reflects upon a particular story of Jewish history, but more than that, it is a pattern which reflects in many different stories since then, and they're all Purim-like. Between Purim and Hanukkah, you pretty much cover all situations. In relatively recent times, this idea is expressed that the Holocaust with Nazi Germany and Hitler is the Purim type, meaning an enemy who desired to destroy every man, woman, and child of the Jewish people. Haman's plot was thwarted without a body count. Hitler's plot eventually failed, but with a very, very high and costly body count. But that's not the point. The point is, it's the same story with different characters. And between the Purim story and the Holocaust, it happened dozens and dozens of times, and it continues to happen. When it comes to Hanukkah, we're talking more of a spiritual attempt against the life of the Jewish people, and the relatively recent phenomenon that follows the Hanukkah template would be the Soviet Union, where you could be a good, upstanding member of the Soviet society, but not with religion being in the way. I had the privilege a number of years ago of introducing Yosef Mendelevich, a former prisoner of Zion, a refusnik, who spoke at the center, and he speaks at the center very often over the years to Russians, but he spoke to our English-speaking crowd a couple of times, and that first time when I introduced him, I started to cry, because I had found out that he and I are roughly the same age. He and I, both in the past, have taught Hebrew and other Jewish studies. I received a salary for it, and he was imprisoned for it. There was an attempt to tear the Jew away from his Judaism, and that is the Hanukkah story, repeated again and again. So when we talk about miracles and victories that happened then, we also are saying, and now, Bazman Hazeh, now. Not just this time of the year, this time in the history of the Jewish people. part of it could refer to recent events. Part of it could refer to current events, in which case the stories have not come to an end, and in which case our saying the thank you to God has an implied prayer for it to happen again and again and again, that we have victories and miracles on our behalf. I also want to blur for a minute the distinction between Purim and Chanukah. I know that there are people, and myself included, who will speak in contrast between the two dates, but I find the other way of looking at it, that they're not all that different, because if our spiritual life was a target of the Evanim when we started, when they started, it certainly didn't continue like that. Because when you say to a people, you may not circumcise your boys who are born, and if you are found doing that, you will be put to death, then it becomes a threat to physical existence too, not just spiritual. Yes, if people stop doing circumcision and stop learning Torah and stop keeping mitzvot, ostensibly we would not have been the target of the physical destruction. But if that's not a possibility for the Jewish people, they don't stop learning Torah. We don't stop learning Torah. We don't stop doing mitzvot. We might go into hiding at different times of history. But what happens is, or what we're talking about, is a continuing threat, not just to our spiritual existence, but to our physical existence as well. And we should keep that in mind. Let's have a listen to another track from that Shalhevet album. This is one of four different Yevanim Nikpitzu Alai songs that they have on the album. And it is the stanza of Ma'oz Tzur that addresses the Chanukah threat about the Greeks who stood up against us in the time of the Chashmonaim. And Baruch Hashem, we were successful in repelling that attempt at our, as I said, spiritual as well as physical life. Let me read the words before we play the music. I'll read them in English. Then the Greeks gathered against me in the days of the Hasmoneans. They broke down the walls of my towers and defiled all the oils. But from the last remaining flask a miracle was wrought for your beloved. Therefore the sages ordained these 8 days for song and praise.
I'm gonna make you mine.
Okay, let's go back to Al Hanisim for a moment and hear the following. Al Hanisim, both in the Birkat HaMazon after a meal, as well as in the Amidah, is inserted in the Thank You God Bracha. So here we are thanking God for the following sequence of things. That you, Masarta Giborim B'Yad Chalashim, you delivered the strong into the hands of the weak, the many into the hands of the few, the impure into the hands of the pure, the wicked into the hands of the righteous, and the arrogant into the hands of those who were engaged in the study of your Torah. V'zeidim biyad osikei Toratecha. Now, I don't think everybody would interpret it this way, but it's to be found that Giborim b'ad chalashim, Rabim b'ad ma'atim, Tameim b'ad tahorim, and Rasha'im b'ad tzadikim all refer to the Greeks being given over by God into the hands of the Jewish people. The last phrase, Zedim b'ad osikei Toratecha, arrogant, refers to our fellow Jews who were arrogant in the way that they abandoned the observance of Torah and mitzvot and embraced the modern philosophy of Hellenism. And unfortunately that echoes in modern times as well, where you hear Jews of different quote streams saying that certain things are archaic, old-fashioned, primitive, and we have progressed since then. That's an arrogance that those people were delivered into the hands of those who kept faithful to Torah tradition. The mityavnim, Yevanim, the Greeks, Mityavnim are the Hellenized Jews, presented an element in what became the Hanukkah story that our sages sort of did not want us to dwell upon because it's very embarrassing, to say the least, and it is much more politically acceptable to vent against the Greeks who tried to oppress the Jews rather than a portion of the Jews who sympathized with the Greeks and fought against the Torah tradition. This, I believe, reflects the Parshiot HaShavua, where you have, up till now, as I mentioned earlier, Esav, Lavan types of enemies, Shechem and Hamor type of enemy, which we can summarize as enemies from the outside, and very uncomfortable in this week's reading of Vayeshev, next week of Miketz, the following week of Vayigash, when there's the reconciliation of the brothers, but only partially, and it is most uncomfortable to talk about the civil war aspect of the Hanukkah story. I need to say this, and listeners can argue if they want. You're welcome to write to me at tt@ou.org. But when I see the, and I know there's other ways of looking at it, but I'm not. I'm looking at it from my perspective. When I see enemies from the outside, let's say Hamas in Gaza, and let's say Hezbollah from Lebanon or Syria, targeting Israel, most recently, of course, the Hamas from Gaza, and among the Jewish people, you have people who say, what? building Jewish homes in Area E1, this will not help facilitate a Palestinian state in Eretz Yisrael. It will cut off the Arabs from the old city and a certain area and the rest of the territory. This, to me, echoes very loudly and dissonantly in my head of the phenomenon of the Mityavnim. To be sure, motives are different. I'll say that at the outset. But when you have an enemy, a sworn enemy, whose main goal is the destruction of the state of Israel, one of the methods that they seek to further their goal is the establishment and recognition of a state, a governmental state, which they want to name Palestine, within the borders of Eretz Yisrael. And you have Jews who, for different reasons, feel that the poor Arabs need another state. The 22 Arab states in this area are not enough, but they need another state within, and they need to share Jerusalem. Why should Jerusalem only be the capital of Jewish Israel? It should also be the capital of Muslim and Arab Palestine. Chas v'chalila, God forbid. But you hear Jews getting up and interviewed on television and radio and in the media saying these things. It is an internal aid to our external enemies, which weaken our position, which I am stating now, me personally, not speaking for the OU and not speaking for Arut Sheva, although I know Arut Sheva would agree with what I'm saying, and I hope the OU would also, that this Eretz Yisrael belongs ach v'rak, solely to the Jewish people, and there should be one state, and it should be a Jewish state, which under ideal circumstances should be one that welcomes people of other religions and other groups to live within our borders, but only as respectful people living here, not as hostile and not as those who want to aid and abet our enemies. The continued clashes within Israel, within the Jewish people living in Israel, of the political left and the political right, if you want to call that. I hope that I am with that group which is for Eretz Yisrael, La'am Yisrael, Al-Pi Torat Yisrael, which can be defined in the language of Al-Hanisim as Osekei Toratecha, and that the Zedim are the ones who are trying to be overly nice, bending over backwards, shooting yourself in the foot to accommodate other people who want to destroy us. I don't understand that, but okay. By the way, I echo the same sentiment that Abbas echoes and many of the other people. Di l'kibush, enough of occupation, except that I'm talking about an Arab and Muslim occupation of parts of Eretz Yisrael. Enough of that. We should never, after 67, have left the status of all of those territories be the way they are. They should have been incorporated into the state of Israel just as the Golan and just as Yerushalayim was. With all that said, I'll just emphasize that Chazal, our sages, portrayed Chanukah only with the enemy from the outside at the fore, and the undercurrent was the internal problem. So I vented, but I shouldn't dwell upon it now. And Amir Tzashem, next week we will have more Hanukkah stuff. In the meantime, Shabbat Shalom, Hanukkah Sameach, Lehish Tameach.